Roxy Bernstein on the tweet machine. Hey, Roxy.
Hi, OC. How you doing, pal?
Doing awesome. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Getting ready for this big hockey game tonight.
Yeah.
You know me.
You were in Salt Lake last week for Utah BYU, right? For the baseball game?
I was. I got to see that firsthand.
And I would assume I had to train. I wasn't able to meet up with you, but I would assume that you made it to your favorite place, your favorite eatery here in Salt Lake.
Absolutely. Landed in Salt Lake at about 1 o'clock, and then drove straight over to the Red Iguana. Had a nice meal and did a little pregame prep back at the hotel before heading over to the ballpark. And that was a fun night at Smith's Ballpark last Tuesday night. A great crowd. There was over 5,000 people there for the game. And it was great because I hadn't seen Utah in person, OC, all year. It was great to see them and get a chance to see the first-place team in the league.
Are they the best team in the league?
You have to say they are. And you look at them on paper and how are they doing this? I've had a couple of coaches tell me that Jason Rose is the best Friday night starter they've seen in the Pac-12. And that's coming high praise from guys like Pat Casey at Oregon State, from Jay Johnson at Arizona. And he's been terrific. And the key has been their play in the weekends, a veteran team. They won some critical conference series early. I think it gave them a lot of confidence. And they've just rolled with it. And they got off to that miserable start. And if Bill Kinneberg is not the Pac-12 Coach of the Year, they should just stop handing out the award. I don't care what happens tonight and next weekend, OC. Bill Kinneberg, what he has done this year, hands down, has to be the Pac-12 Coach of the Year.
So I don't disagree with anything you said there. Why did they not have the same kind of success out of conference?
That's a good question. And, you know, early on they had the struggles, and even Bill, we were talking about that Tuesday before the game against BYU, and he said it took a little while for this team to believe in themselves and gain the confidence that they could compete and they could win. And for years they've been told they couldn't. And even before this season started, they were told they couldn't. They were picked last in the preseason Pac-12 poll, and I think it took a little bit for them to get it going. And once they did, they've been impossible to stop. And you look around that team, and it's a veteran group, and that has really helped. I think that their struggles early on in the year, they didn't panic. They didn't get down on themselves. They knew there would be an opportunity. And look, let's face it. At this point, the only way they are getting in is if they win the conference. They will not get in if they don't win the Pac-12. The RPI and the overall record won't get them in. But they're in a position to win the league, and it's crazy because tonight's game at Cal really means nothing for Utah. That it's all about next weekend and winning that series against Washington. Essentially, those three games next weekend in Salt Lake City are the Pac-12 championship series because it'll either be Utah or Washington that wins the Pac-12 automatic bid. Nobody else can at this point. Yes, Arizona State can tie in terms of conference wins, but the tiebreaker goes to Washington or Utah should there be a tie. So therefore, I think you're set up for a tremendous weekend next weekend at Salt Lake City.
It's been a pretty rough Pac-12 season for baseball, kind of like football, where everyone's just kind of cannibalized themselves. Nobody's really risen to the top. Do they actually have a true College World Series contender in this conference? And with the way Utah's playing right now, should they win the conference, could they even be considered a contender at that point?
Well, call me crazy, and OC may label me as a homer here, but if Cal gets their act together, Cal's a team that can make a run because tonight they're getting back one of the premier pitchers in college baseball. He hadn't pitched in the last almost 2 months, Dalton Jeffries. And Cal was rolling early until Jeffries got hurt. And when he got hurt, it really caused some problems for Cal pitching-wise. Plus, they've added another arm since. Their closer they anticipated having at the beginning of the year was out for 2.5 months with a knee injury. So they're a team that has been battle-tested in the postseason, but they still have to get in. Cal has to win this game tonight, and I think at minimum they have to win 2 out of 3 in Washington State next weekend to get in. Because that, you know, when you look at college basketball, and the committee is supposed to take into account injury and how is this team performing at the end of the year. And those are two things that could be in Cal's favor should they finish strong. I think they're a possibility that they could make a run, and depending on the draw, I don't think Oregon State has enough pitching. When Drew Rasmussen went down, that really handcuffed them. But I just, out west, they're tough matchups. I think Arizona's a tough team to go up against because they play such a unique style of baseball. Oregon has been disappointing. They can't hit, and their pitching was supposed to carry them, and that's been inconsistent. So I know that you'll hear a lot of the national pundits say the Pac-12 is down, and I do believe it is a little bit down this year. Injuries have played a big role in why the conference is down.
Roxy Bernstein is our guest here on ESPN 700. When it's Roxy, we talk everything. We talk a little Utah baseball. We talk a little Major League Baseball. We'll talk some Pac-12 football. We'll even talk a little NBA. Ryan Vogelsong got hit in the face with a pitch. Went to the hospital. He was pitching for the Giants when I worked out there, and I'm sure that you've seen much more of him than I have. But is this just one more reason why the DH needs to be acceptable in both leagues?
Well, it was scary. I saw your tweet, OC, that you sent out about the picture of the injury. It looked brutal.
Yeah.
I'm not a proponent of the DH. I would like to see the pitchers hit, to be honest with you. And look, this could happen to anybody. It just happened to be Ryan Vogelsong. We've seen real hitters, if you will, get hit in the face. And it's unfortunate, and you hate to see it. But I've been of the belief that the pitcher should have to hit. And if you're in the field, you should hit. And, you know, there's some DHs, like Big Poppy doesn't need to bring a glove to the ballpark every day. He just goes up there to swing it.
Yeah.
And plus, the way you need to be held accountable, I think if guys are throwing at hitters, because that's become a big controversy again with Josh Donaldson getting upset over the weekend by some issues with the Minnesota Twins. So I think that because of that issue as well, I'd like to see pitchers still have to hit, because if they're going to throw at somebody, then they're going to have to deal with it when they come to the plate.
And you know what? You're absolutely right, because if pitchers weren't hit, we would not have seen the glorious home run by Bartolo Colon.
Well, that was one of the best moments of the year. Had to be.
It was amazing. It was really funny because we were talking a week previous to that happening about Leicester City winning the EPL title and how they were 5,000-1 odds against them doing so at the beginning of the year. And I brought up as something that I would give you 5,000-1 betting odds. I said, I'd give you 5,000-1 betting odds that Bartolo Colon's not going to hit a home run. And then a week later, he did it.
He has provided some great moments over the years. He really has. And look, I don't know how he's still doing it at this age. And he was caught taking something he shouldn't have. At some point, I'd like to think everything's on the up and up now, and I have no reason to believe it's not, considering I'm sure he's been tested very carefully and passed everyone with flying colors. But it's amazing how he's rekindled his career, and he was thought to be out of baseball. He goes to Oakland, gets kind of a second wind, and now the Mets have ridden him, and then he was a key part of them in their postseason run last year, and he provides some nice comic relief for everybody. And it's funny because I think Shields, in his next start, I'm forgetting who he went up against. It may have been the Giants. But somebody said in the clubhouse before the game, look, this guy gave up a home run to Bartolo Colon. We're not losing to James Shields tonight.
Roxy, we've closed out Pac-12 spring ball. Everything's done. I'm sure you got to take a chance to take a look at some of these teams, and I'm sure you called some of the games as well. Anybody stand out to you after this spring? Any teams you think might be in a better position than you thought going into spring?
Well, for me, I think the interesting thing around the league are going to be the quarterback battles that are going to continue in the fall between USC, Arizona State, Stanford. I think those are some interesting decisions that are going to be made. I think that Cal has all of a sudden come up with some big winners lately since spring ball's ended with the announcement that graduate transfer Davis Webb, who was thought to be going to Colorado, is now going to go to Cal. He will be the starting quarterback. There's no doubt in my mind when he shows up on campus. Plus, they got a five-star wide receiver for next year that turned down Georgia and Notre Dame to go to Cal. So I think the Pac-12 North is going to be pretty loaded when you look at it next year. But the quarterback battles, to me, stand out. When you look at ASU and USC and Stanford, those are three position battles I'm going to be very interested to see how they progress through fall camp.
Roxy, you're out there in the Bay Area. Obviously, the Warriors have now dropped two games to Oklahoma City, and it looks like they're actually maybe a vulnerable team. Draymond Green may be facing a suspension. Is the Bay Area getting nervous?
I think there's some trepidation out here now. Yeah, with the way they're down 2-1. This is not like it was last year, guys, when they were down 2-1 to the Memphis Grizzlies and to the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is different. And especially how they got it handed to them last night in Game 3, and now we're waiting for the NBA to say something about Draymond Green and what's going to happen with his availability for Game 4. You really hope he's not suspended, because that's a series and maybe a potential world championship-changing decision by the NBA. And Kiki Vandeweghe and his office there at the NBA, we'll see what's going to happen with Green. I do expect him to be available. I don't think he will get suspended. That's just my gut. And I think if he was going to get suspended, we would have heard by now. But I do expect him to get fined significantly and for that call to be upgraded to a flagrant 2. But there is, and this is, Draymond Green, there's been video all over the place today about this is not something that is, it happens a lot. Now, he may not connect when he's kicking and flailing his legs like he did. I don't believe there was intent in terms of Stephen Adams, the Thunder, trying to say this is the second time it's happened in this series. I disagree. I think they're isolated incidents. But I know there has to be some concern, because Draymond Green, he's paramount to what the Warriors do. As valuable as Steph Curry is and Klay Thompson, what they do, to me, guys, Draymond Green is the real MVP of that team. Despite, you know, Steph Curry winning the MVP, and as phenomenal and a great as a player as he is, and the dynamic things he can do offensively, Draymond is the guy that makes that team go. So if they happen to get suspended for Game 4, I think they're in real, real trouble.
Who's the favorite right now? Of, I guess there are four teams remaining, but let's be honest, we all really think it's just three teams. Who's the favorite to win this thing at this time as of today?
That's a really good question, because you would have to say before the conference final started, it was the Warriors, just because they're the defending champs and they set an NBA record by winning 73 games. But the way this postseason has gone in this battle, I expected to go at least six, maybe seven games with the Warriors and Oklahoma City, that you have to label Cleveland as the favorite at this point. The way they played in the postseason, the way they have elevated their game the last few months under Tyronn Lue, to me, they have clearly the easier route to the NBA Finals, even though they lost Game 3. But that could change if the NBA makes a decision and suspends Draymond Green. All of a sudden, you're looking at Oklahoma City very easily going up 3-1. But to me, right now, Cleveland's playing the best.
It sounds silly almost coming out of my mouth, but the MVP, Steph Curry, does he need to do more to elevate where, I mean, 24 points, it's a respectable game. It's a great game for most players. But do people need more out of Steph Curry?
I don't think so, to be honest, OC. I just think the Warriors have been awful defensively. And that was the problem more than anything in Game 3. Draymond struggled, the Warriors struggled. But defensively, they just seem to collapse. And that can't happen. And that's something that has carried this team. People want to rave about the Warriors' offense and how good they are at that end of the floor, which is true. But they don't get enough credit for how good they were in the regular season defensively, and that's kind of eluded them here, especially in this series. That's where the Warriors have to pick it up, guys. It's not about the offensive end for me. It's about defensively finding ways to limit Durant, finding ways to limit Westbrook, and the role players. That was it. In Game 1, it was about the role players. Guys like Serge Ibaka and Steven Adams did a lot of really good things. They were non-existent in Game 2. That's because the Warriors got after them defensively. That has to happen again in Game 4. It's not about Steph. To me, it's about the Warriors' defense.
Can Steph take this series over? And if we get to a situation where OKC is going punch for punch with these guys, are they in a position where Steph, I know you mentioned that Draymond Green's maybe the most valuable guy for Golden State, but could they be in a position where Steph just says, all right, I've got to take this thing over. I'm just going to outscore OKC by myself?
Well, he's got that ability at least to take over games for stretches, like he did in Game 2 when he went on one of those runs. And we've seen him do it so often, where all of a sudden he hits one, he hits two, and then it's just bang, bang, bang. He's going to hit five or six threes in the span of 6 minutes. We know he can do that. It's in there. And, yes, that would certainly be a help for the Warriors, but the Warriors need more than that from the offensive end. But he's got that ability. We've seen it where, for a stretch, he could just dominate the game and he can go one of those patented runs. And that certainly is a backbreaker for teams on the opposition because there's nothing you could do. He steps out to 30 feet, and it doesn't matter if there's defense in his face. He's going to hit that shot. And if you're in a switch and get a mismatch and put a bigger guy on him, whether it's Adams, whether it's Ibaka, he'll crush you when you try to do that. And that's the problem that Oklahoma City runs into if they're switching things and Steph is on. How do you defend it? And then if you try to step up on him, well, then it opens up things for guys like Klay Thompson and Harrison Barnes.
Looking forward to the rest of that series. Looking forward to Game 4 tonight. Cavaliers-Raptors will be 6:30 Mountain Time. Roxy, thanks so much for taking the time, as always, my friend.
I'm just waiting for a decision, guys. And we're waiting for the NBA.
I know.
It's what? It's almost 6:30 East Coast time.
Yeah, we're waiting. We're waiting.
We're all waiting. And now Carlos Boozer is on set, so you know it can't get any better.
<It's not. laughs> Thanks, Roxy.
You got it, fellas.